All right, it's the Kenya Podcast again here from Living Faith. I'm Luke, and this one is my wife. That's right. My wife went on this trip. It was her first trip ever. After about 9 times of me going, she finally went along on the trip, and I think she enjoyed it. Well, I know she enjoyed it. I'm just not sure if she regretted it or not. We'll find out. You'll find out. You're about to listen to the podcast. So, this is my wife's take on the whole trip. Really an awkward interview to do of your own spouse, but I think it went well. You can judge for yourself. Here's Joni. All right. We're good to go.
Okay.
This is weird, right?
It is weird.
So you're my wife.
Yes.
And we went to Kenya.
We did.
And now I have to interview you.
That's a little weird.
It is a little weird. I'm not going to lie.
What do you want to know that I haven't told you?
Well, that is a good question.
Yeah, I don't know.
What were you, worried about anything going to Kenya?
I was worried about getting sick.
Yeah. You're always worried about getting sick, though.
Yeah, but I didn't want to drink death water, and then all of a sudden, I'm back at our, I don't know what you want to call it, not hotel.
Compound.
Right. Like, I don't want to be in there sick.
Right.
And I had no idea what our living quarters were going to be like, and so I'm really glad I didn't get sick, because that would have been disgusting.
Yeah, you're always nervous about things not going well in that regard.
I also was worried about the long airline flights.
Yeah, you seem to handle those like a champ.
Well, you're just in a closed space for a long time.
Yeah.
I'm not really worried about like a plane crash or anything, although that is always a fear, but I don't know.
Yeah. Planes never crash. I've never been on one that crashed. So there you go. Then it never happens. If it doesn't happen to me, it never happens.
Oh, I see that.
That's how I operate.
Okay.
So yeah, I know you were nervous about the food too. Were you nervous at all about what you would eat or anything like that?
Not really. Because we had had some food here of what it was like in Kenya. Plus I made sure that I had enough snacks and stuff. I feel like I cheated a little bit because I knew what you have packed in the past and you have told me about your travels. And so I feel like I had a leg up on some of the newbies not being there, but some of the planning, packing.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. You've been through it before.
Yeah.
You know what goes on. But then any other concerns about the trip before you went?
No, just those two things, just the long travel and getting sick, but
yeah. So let me ask you, why did you want to go on a mission trip to Kenya?
I wanted to go, and part of it was selfish. Not because I wanted to get away from my kids, because it's almost more work to leave.
It is.
I wanted to go because I wanted to be able to experience something similar to what you have experienced in the past. I wanted to know what you were feeling, what you were doing, what was so great about Kenya.
I don't think that's selfish.
But I wanted to be part of it.
Yeah.
I wanted to be part of the club.
You want to be on Team Kenya?
I did. And now I am.
Totally.
I got baptized by fire.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I don't think that's selfish. I mean, I just think that you saw something that was interesting in me and saw that it obviously was having a huge impact on me and wanted to have some kind of similar experience.
Yeah, that was mostly what drove it, was that I really just wanted to experience that same experience. I wanted to meet the people that you talked about and see the places that you had seen, or at least some of it. I mean, I'm not going to get to some of those places maybe, but.
Right. But like, so what did you see in me that was compelling? Or I mean, what about it from perspective of knowing me made you want to go?
the change in perspective of what really matters. You know, I feel like sometimes now, like something that might have been annoying before is like, yeah, that's not a big deal.
Yeah, there's so many big things.
I mean, just the whole culture of relationships are more important than time. We get caught up with that in America a lot. And I think part of the Kenyan culture is that they value people and relationships with them so much. And, well, I mean, I learned that. I felt it. But you also brought that back. I mean, you've always said that, you know, our family is important. So,
yeah, there's a sense of being valued, too. I mean, it's so they value relationships so much more. And you know that going into it. But then once you experience being valued a ton, yeah, it's pretty remarkable.
I'm trying to think what else I saw beforehand. You just had that desire to go back. So normally, I shouldn't say normally, some people, and in my experience too, you go on a mission trip and you check that box off. Well, yeah, when I was in high school, I went on a mission trip, check, I move on to the next thing. And I think it was really cool how the whole Kenya mission started from here, from Living Faith. And now it's, I don't see it ending. I just see it has impacted too many people's lives. And I think people, it's infectious. You want to go.
Yeah. I was just having that conversation with somebody today that was saying, you know, this thing can't end. And they've never been on the trip and they're never going to go on the trip. But they were like, this thing can't ever end at Living Faith. And I was like, yeah, I know.
Well, and it doesn't have to. And it doesn't mean that we have to have specifically two trips a year and it has to do this and that. I just don't think those relationships are ever going to die. I think that people are going to want to go. New people are going to say, hey, I'm willing to try it. I don't know. That was the other thing. You've always wanted to go back.
Yep.
And so I was like, I got to see this place that has captured your heart and you want to go back every time. Although you do come home.
Well, I'll be honest. I was worried that you were going to have the same captivation that I had and that we'd end up like trying to figure out how to make this thing happen. I was just so worried. And that kind of tells you that I don't really have what it takes to be a full-time missionary. And it's not the desire. I would love to do it, but it's not. I was worried that we'd get there and you'd be like, all right, let's pack up, let's move, let's bring the kids over, let's be full-time missionaries in Kenya forever.
I did not feel that. Which I'm sure my mom and dad are like super happy about that.
Right.
No, while I was there, I could see what we were doing was fabulous, spirit-led, but I didn't feel like, now what did I feel like I wanted to go back? In the moment, I was like, yeah, I'm done. But when I got back, I was like, I got to go back. I have to I want to talk to more people. I want to see the same people and then I want to reach more people. And, but I did feel like I need to come back to my home here in the U.S. and be here with my family.
Yeah, and because I was scared that would happen, I'm sure that that's a pretty good indication that it's not really me. You know, right. It's not really my calling. Because I've been scared to do stuff that I felt, and that's part of it too. Is I know that just this about me that if I feel called to do something, even if it's terrifying, I will do it.
Yeah. Not me.
Yeah. You think you're a wuss? You're not that much of a wuss. You've done crazy. We adopted embryos. You've done crazy stuff. You had triplets and stuff.
Yeah, I didn't really have a choice with the triplets.
You had a choice to go through an awfully unique and crazy thing.
True. But mostly because of you. You're the crazy one.
Yeah. You're the grounded one.
You talk me into it.
If it wasn't for you, you realize like how off the wall and probably dead by now I'd be.
Yeah, true. You would be.
You helped me not make bad mistakes.
Yeah.
How have you changed, do you think, since the trip? How has it changed who you are?
I am still processing all the things that you had processed your first couple times to Kenya. I went and volunteered for Meals from the Heartland through Mercy, and they had one of those big events where they, you know, you can sign up for 2-hour sessions, and you go and you fill the bags and they cheer you on and you're doing good. And I have no idea where those bags are going and whether that's a good thing or not. So I struggle with that. We should be helping feeding starving people, but are we continuing a problem? I don't know. So as I'm there in my 2-hour time frame that I was signed up to be there, I'm thinking about that, but I'm not going to not do it because I'd already committed to it. So I wasn't going to like not do it out of principle because somebody else would have stepped in and done it. But I just don't know where those bags of food are going. Like I didn't look into it. And I only say that because, I know that like our desire as like Americans is to buy something and just fix the immediate problem. But you have to figure out, is that a symptom of the problem or the actual problem? And what are we doing to help?
Yeah.
To actually fix that. So I've been processing a lot of, is this good work?
Well, and I think the first step is one that you've already engaged in, and that is the connection to the people being helped. And that's where I think we're lacking a lot in our social work of our country. That's what we lack in our environment is there's so many ways to get involved without actually interacting with the real problem. It's the hashtag activism, you know. It is posting something on Facebook and now I've done my part. You know, like I posted something about some injustice, so now I've done my thing, but you've never experienced that injustice. It's, you know, packaging a meal for people that you've never experienced their world. And it's that disconnection that I think is really dangerous because we fall in this mode of fooling ourselves into I've fully participated when in fact you've not participated at all. But you've done that in Kenya. And now having done that, it's okay to participate in ways where you don't have that connection because you know that it's required.
Well, and I know it's okay. It's just, it still is a little, after reading Toxic Charity, you don't want to just do things because somebody has set something up. The other thing is in Kenya, I see an occupational therapy clinic. It's closed. There's a building. There's nothing there. Because some OT thought, oh, we can do good things and help fix all these problems. And then that person's funds or desire left. And that's it.
Yep.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
That process has been with me.
Yeah. Yeah. To build something that is sustainable, to invest in ways that can go on without you is critical. I mean, it's critical in everything. This is parenting, right?
Right. That's how we invest in like our kids, and we tell them, you know, we're teaching you this and we want you to act this way because you're a representative of our family. And so we send them out. And so when we go to Kenya and we give resources like, I mean, we didn't give everybody a Bible, but we gave a Bible to the leaders, and then they're supposed to be the ones teaching. So if we can do that more, I think we can reach more people.
Yeah. I mean, it's for parenting and kids. The goal is that they don't need you someday.
Yeah.
Because if your kids always need you, I mean, guess what? Someday we're going to die and there's going to be 6 humans that better be able to figure it out on their own.
Well, Malachi won't live with us. He's too self-sufficient.
Yeah. He might move out next year.
Right.
4 years old, he's probably good.
Yeah. But yeah, I would like to make sure that now that I'm helping, when I'm helping, that it's not something that people are dependent. Now I'm fine with helping, and if there's something we need to put a Band-Aid on, fine. But then let's make sure that whole thing is going to heal up.
Yep.
And not continue to need more Band-Aids.
It really is. It creates a frustration in you because you start to evaluate everything that way. I mean, evaluate mm-hmm. how you do church and how you set up ministries and like, is this thing sustainable? All of that. Well, it has to be able
even
to,
parenting. You're yeah. like, okay, I can say it's okay for you to have a snack before dinner once. If I keep doing that, they're not eating dinner, and now I've created another problem.
Yeah, yeah. It's so easy just to give in and give them a snack, and then you forget everything else. I know, but like it's hard because you want to change the world and you want the world to be a better place, and it's just you want to not have to ruin your own world to do it.
Right, and on the other hand, you also learn that there are such bigger issues than what I have in my world. Like, yeah. Give your kid a fruit snack before eating dinner. You have the luxury of having fruit snacks and dinner. So what's the big deal?
Right.
Double-edged sword.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, it's hard to not come back with like a fatalistic mindset and be like, nothing matters. You don't know what the pain is like. Yeah. It's easy to slide into that. I'm sure I was kind of a jerk a few times when I came back and just wanted to be like, well, you're upset about stupid things. That's the case.
A little bit, but not bad. I mean, I guess I knew what you were coming back from. But the first time you went, you actually like had the tour of like the Kibera slums.
Yeah,
so you had that real like bad like tour. Well, it wasn't bad, but like, look, Americans, look how bad it is in Nairobi. But I'm not saying that it's fabulous in Kakuma. But that's different. Like it wasn't like the slums, because we did drive by them and we did smell them, see them.
Yeah. Well, it's hard not to smell them.
Right.
But yeah, so the point of those, of the poverty tour, the poverty porn.
Oh, that's what you call it.
Yeah. The design is to make Americans feel bad so that they invest money.
But you don't have to take them into the slums to see that.
I know. And it's... And then what you've done is you've created the exact wrong thing, because you expose people to it and it's, oh my gosh, it's terrible and awful. And then now go back home and sit in your comfy couch and write me a check.
Right.
So you're not really solving any problems.
Right.
it's that lack of connection we were talking about earlier. It just reinforces that participate without connection. You just can't participate in charitable things and mission trips without having some type of connection to the people. You can't do it. You cannot do this stuff efficiently or well or in a way that I think is God-pleasing unless you participate, unless you get invested. And you just can't do it from a distance. But anything on the trip that surprised you, that you weren't expecting before you... I thought for sure it was going to be like this, but it turns out...
No, I mean... I was not expecting to shower with cockroaches. I mean, obviously I knew that was probably going to happen. No, you're pretty good at like storytelling and telling me how things were. So I didn't realize how grueling the travel was going to be once we got to like Lodwar, because that was pretty comfy up until that point.
Yeah.
And then I knew that it wasn't going to be like, I knew we weren't going to sit in an air-conditioned bus and drive nicely all the way to Kakuma. Like, I knew that, but it was pretty rough.
It was rough.
Riding on those not roads. I don't even know. I my head can't even explain the off-road, not road, pothole business that it was. Like, yeah. I can't even articulate what that is. Anyway, that part I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, that was rough.
I mean, I knew it wasn't. I mean, I'd heard about like not good roads, but that was pretty. And because it was hot.
Yeah.
That's the hottest it's ever been for you in Kenya, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That was, those were the toughest, like, physical conditions for the most part.
I mean, besides camping, but like when you're camping, you expect to be camping.
And it was also, I mean, it got down to like 60 degrees at night.
Right. Right. So there, I mean, yeah. If it had just cooled down at night, we might have been like, okay, this sucks right. during the day, but at least when the sun goes down, we're going to have a little bit of, you know, reprieve. And that just didn't happen.
Yeah.
But
I know.
I'm glad that I took Ambien with me and I'm glad I took it every night. And so
I just refilled my order for Germany.
I don't have a refill.
Maybe if you're lucky, I'll let you have one.
Oh, don't say that on recording. I have my own prescription.
So what was the most challenging thing about the trip? I don't mean like an event, like just the toughest thing to deal with. What? Give me that look.
Well, the toughest thing when we were visiting people was being brave enough to just talk to people with an interpreter in front of, you know, it wasn't tough to talk to the people that were there, the people that were African and we were talking to them. I think what was hardest for me was worrying about what the people on the trip would think that I was saying. Like, I know that they weren't judging me, but they're listening because they're hearing my English, obviously. But then it's getting translated. And these people that are in the concentration, mm-hmm. sort of, refugee like camp,
yeah.
They're so happy to see us. They could care less what we're telling them.
Yeah,
I mean, they're happy that we're telling them about Jesus, but right. they're so happy and they don't care the content of what we're saying. And I was worried that people would... that the rest of the team would think that, you know, that I wasn't saying anything the right way or I don't know.
You weren't going to be profound enough?
Yes.
I mean, you're the pastor's wife. Don't you know everything?
I don't. But that's what I'm worried yeah. about. Anne gave a great talk to one of the groups that we walked around with. It was fabulous. And then I just felt like, how do I follow that? Joanne, she just starts talking and telling people about Jesus, and she just was so brave. And I'm like, oh, man, what if I don't say enough? Do I sound dumb? That kind of a thing.
Right. So, I know.
But then as you are there, you realize, well, they did it. That's not so bad. Okay, it's my turn. And then you're like, oh, that maybe that wasn't so good. But then as you're listening to other people, like a thought comes to you, and it definitely is the Holy Spirit, because you're like, okay, wait, I have something to add.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. He kind of picks and chooses and pulls the group together.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, 90% of it is just the fact that you show up. I mean, it's a big deal. I say it over and over again, just showing up is about more than 90% of the entire thing is, people are so appreciative that you would be willing to come and talk to them, that you would travel this. Because they, if they could just go back home, they would.
Right.
But we have left our home on purpose to go to them.
Right.
And so already there's just this sense of, you've come to see me and visit me. And that's so very important. And it's, you know, like as people start saying things like, whatever. It doesn't matter what you say. Just right. You're here.
Right. I wasn't worried. Well, and the other hard part was the translation.
Yeah.
Just, okay, so I say a few things and now I wait. And because your thought, train of thought gets sort of interrupted, and then you have to sort of train your brain to stay on task and then keep talking to people. But you get better at it as the week goes on. And I'm sure you're better at it every time you go back.
Yeah. Yeah. And preaching is the worst. I mean, the first few times I preached, tried to, you know, pull together more than 3 minutes worth of, because I mean, you try preaching a 30-minute sermon, because over there everything's longer too. Right. So they're like, well, if you're not preaching for 30 minutes, you're not even trying. So try and do 30 minutes in like 1 minute segments and have it be translated over and over again. Oh, it's brutal.
Yeah.
I find myself repeating over and over again, the translator looking at you like, really? I'm going to have to think of another way to say that. Sorry, dude.
Well, that's the other thing, is a lot of things get repeated, but that's okay.
Yeah.
You either pick a different way to say it, or you just are repeating it again, but it's in a different time in your conversation, because there's not a whole lot that's written down and passed along. Like, we are not going door to door or hut to hut, if you whatever you want to call those places. We're not handing them a brochure and then saying, hey, we're here with the church and we want to tell you about Jesus. Here's our brochure. Like, we're not doing that. Like, we have to keep repeating ourselves, because that's how people learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's good.
Or at least that's how they learn, is a lot of repetition.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That was a interesting trip for me to have you on this trip, because I was just really nervous about how it would impact, because I mean, it really does. It changes people's lives, and it wrecks their hearts, and all. I mean, it just turns people's worlds upside down.
Yeah. But I was good, though. It's not like I was clingy or anything.
No. I didn't mean while there. I mean,
oh,
like for the rest of your life.
Yeah. I don't think, I was just telling Joanne before we started that I can't help but say, well, when we were in Kenya,
I know.
I mean, it's there. It's on your mind and your heart, and you just want to share what you know or what you've learned with everybody, because it's had such an impact on your life.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's pivotal, but it is always for the better. But like, I just have this sense of, you know, why. You know, what right do I have to be the one to put people through it? And
but you don't.
I know. I'm just saying, like, a lot of it stems from my connection to Kenya previous, and then, you know, it starts up here. It just has a sense of, people have, I think, a sense that it's a trip that is life-changing, but they don't understand there's, like, a cost to it.
Yeah.
Like, you pay a price emotionally.
Yeah.
And
but it's not such an emotional cost that people won't go back, because Joanne's gone back 5 times.
Oh, I know it's worth it. And I look at all the time, it's going to cost you.
It costs you and a little bit every time. And yet still people want to go.
Yeah.
They want to go back because it's like childbirth, okay? Sometimes you forget that emotional or painful that moment, and then you realize, you're like, okay, I know it's going to hurt, but I'm going to have another baby.
Yeah.
Only I can say that, though, because you have not had children.
Well.
Come out of you.
So, yeah, there's like the price to pay. I know it's worth it, and everybody who's gone has said it's worth it, but it's like this a sense of innocence, or the naivete of just, you know, there's now you can't unknow that. You can't go back to a world where you can pretend, and it's not like you were pretending these things didn't happen. You just didn't know them.
Right.
You went from knowing about them to knowing it.
But that's why I wanted to go. I wanted to know that.
Yeah.
Because that's a shared experience in itself. I'm not saying every husband wife has to experience it if one has and one hasn't. And I don't think it's less of an experience if you haven't, but you're doing things on the home end, because I've been on that end. But
yeah,
I don't think you ruined anything.
No, I wouldn't say I ruined anything. I just, it's like this, you just can't put it back in the bottle, you know, and it's the unknown of what does this mean after Joni has this experience, and once we have this shared thing, and because I'd like our marriage. I liked it before you went, and I, you know, so part of me goes, how does this change us, and how does it affect the two of us? Because I think it's, things are a little bit different now.
I guess a little bit. I don't know how much.
You know, for me, I felt like this is the first time that we've really partnered in a ministry. And we've always been partners in mission.
Right.
This pastor thing has always been a, you know, I don't like just take a call and go to a different state by myself.
Right.
But like, this was a ministry, like a labor level we're going to do this thing together. And I just kind of know what that does. And it was cool. Like, I feel more on team with you in ministry. Like, we were a team that was team Luke and Joni marriage, and then it was team Luke and Joni kids, and both those teams still exist, and we're team Iowa, we're team this, we're team that. Now we're team ministry.
Yeah. I liked it.
I did too. I think part of me was worried that you wouldn't like it.
Oh. No, I'm a trooper.
You're a super trooper. You are a trooper.
I mean, yeah. Even if I didn't like it, I wouldn't have to go back if I didn't like it. But now I got to see and experience all of it, and I would go back. The only other thing that bothers me is I know that you sometimes go to different places and do different things, but I'd want to go back to Kakuma and then. Not that I wouldn't, I would be like, no, I want only the same people, but we really bonded on that trip.
Yeah.
And so I would really like, but you can't redo those experiences. You cannot make it the same.
Right.
You just can't. And I would be okay with going back with a different team. That would certainly be okay. But I think just because we grew together so quickly.
Yeah, it kind of becomes like your kids, right? I mean, I had that sense after Isaac, like I was really kind of nervous about the next kid because, I mean, Isaac was great, loved him so much. And I mean, just this one kid, I thought, you know, I was worried I was going to be a little bit let down by the second kid, you know, like I just was. Okay. But then, you know, we had Matea and you just love her differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, the trips just become different, awesome things.
Well, you just can't compare trips, yeah. I suppose. I mean, I haven't been on a second one to know that, but
yeah,
you can't compare experiences because everything's going to be different. If I do go back there, I might be in a new location or just different people. I don't know, different time span, different things happen. Different things do happen.
Yeah.
I mean, this time we made all of our flights,
mm-hmm.
all of our luggage mm-hmm. made it. So our big snafu was where we stayed. And that really wasn't a snafu. We had a place to stay. We had beds.
Something that resembled a bed.
Something that resembled a receptacle for our toilet. Sometimes we had water. But I mean, that's the snafu. Like, the travel bothered me. That was an issue for me. And for that to go smoothly and to not lose luggage, that was good. In my eyes, so.
Yeah.
So I took the living arrangements. I was like, I can take this in stride because then I sort of just flipped it onto, I already knew it wasn't a vacation. Like, I already knew that. Yeah, I'm out of the country, but I'm not looking for a 5-star hotel, which I wouldn't be anyway. But I was like, switch. Okay, these are my living conditions. But I already was thankful that we had gotten there. And that we had all of our luggage and for the most part, everybody was pretty healthy.
Oh, yeah. Couldn't agree more. I mean, it's about the best you can ask for on a trip like this and in those kind of conditions.
We weren't running through the airport. We weren't slightly talking to the, negotiating what was going on with tickets and stuff.
Yeah.
But really, that was all, it was all taken care of within minutes. It really wasn't nobody's trying to fight to get us onto a flight.
Yeah.
Like we had seats.
Yeah. What do you think you learned about yourself while going?
That I can handle some of those harsh conditions. I just feel like we do cushy and soft sometimes here as far as what we... You know, like we sit in air conditioning when it's hot and
mm-hmm.
eat when we want to, even mm-hmm. though nothing's, I mean, for the most part, if we want it, we find it and we get it. It's not, everything's here for us.
Yeah, I read somewhere that most people quit when it gets about 40% of what they can actually take.
Quit what? Anything?
Anything. Whether it's, you know, exercise or a strenuous, you know, mental activity. You get to about 40% and you quit. It's just kind of the way we just have that margin here. We have that extra space where we don't have to push and we don't have to work. I think.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think you're pretty tough. Carried three kids.
Yeah, just a little fluffier. I don't know. I don't know what else has changed. Have you seen something change?
Yeah, I see a little bit more drive and passion in you to do things, to get things right. I see a little bit more adventure in you too. And I don't know if it's adventure, if it's like the same amount of adventure, but now there's less fear that's tempering it. You know, because if you can go to Kakuma, you can go anywhere. If you can,
I kind of feel like that. Like if I can survive that, if I can climb up a 14er, I can have babies.
Right. Yeah.
And if people don't know, before we had kids, Luke and our friends, we hiked up a 14,000 foot mountain and it was horrible.
Bierstadt.
And
it was awesome.
It was just, it was physically grueling. And when I got to the top, I was like, I will have kids before I do that again. And it was faster to have Isaac than it was to climb up and down that mountain.
So. And I recall that after you had Isaac with zero pain meds, you looked at me and said, not as hard as climbing that mountain.
It wasn't.
I was like, ooh.
But now my new step is, if I can go to Kakuma, I can do anything. Not just go, travel to and from and participate in a week long of mission work.
Yeah.
The other thing is I felt like it was true mission work. Like, I'm not saying that it's bad thing for people to go to build something or help in some way in an orphanage or whatever. I just felt like I finally got to see what it means to be a missionary, to go and to tell people about Jesus.
Yeah. It's different. I was just explaining it in physical therapy this morning to my physical therapist. The way I describe it is people always ask, you know, what sorts of things do you do? And I call it an evangelical mission.
Oh.
You know, we go to tell people about Jesus and share his love. So it kind of raises these questions like, so what about their living conditions and what about the problems they face? It's a bit of a luxury and it's a weird way to describe it, but the problem, the situation of this refugee camp is so big, there isn't a solution.
Right. If the UN can't fix it, what makes them think that I can fix it? Like, I don't have. That's above my pay grade.
Yeah. Okay. And the
other thing that I learned, like it's so you think, oh, I wish I could help these people, but giving them food isn't the solution. They want to go home.
Yeah.
And I am not a politician. I'm not a diplomat and I cannot fix their problem to send them home.
Yeah.
And so, but what can I bring? I can bring them Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And it's always interesting when people start talking about solutions for things. They go, well, can't we do this or can't we do that? And I always want to try not to be rude, be like, so who is this we?
Like, you got to turn your pants?
Yeah, right. Like, what's this we? And this is the problem of disconnection. I would never speak against doing some of those things where you write a check or you've got, I mean, some of that is not good, but there is disconnected ministry that is good and useful, like donating blood. You know, you're disconnected because you're not hooked to the dude you're giving blood to.
Right.
You put it in a bag and it goes to somebody you never meet. But to get a connection, then you start to realize there is no we, and it's only the disconnected, the people who haven't experienced it,
right,
that can start to go, oh, okay, there isn't a we. There is no Calvary coming. There is no There is no organization that is invested in doing this. There's no way to do this.
Because I'm sure for 20 some odd years, somebody's trying to figure out how can we stop, you know, how can we bring peace to these countries so that we can send these people home? And I'm sure we're not the only ones have said that have thought to ourselves, if we send all these people back to their countries, will they have jobs? You know, I mean, will they be able to continue to raise their family and feed them without our meager, you know, rice and all that kind of stuff? And what about the people that live in Kakuma that work for the UN? So now we're going to take away their job instantly by sending these people home. What are they going to do now?
Yep.
So we can set up the old workhouse and send people back to Sudan and Ethiopia.
Right.
Like, you're causing a new problem.
And then you've got,
which is why I can't even, like, I have to remove myself from that and say, what can I actually do?
Right. And what's needed? What is really needed and required is, you know, Jesus. It kind of works out because that's the thing that we got. And there's just there is no solution to this problem. And it's disheartening and it's sad in that regard. But then like I was saying before, it's kind of a luxury to have all of that off the table. Since there is no solution, there's nothing to distract you from doing the one thing that they truly need, which is share Jesus with them.
Right. And I'm not opposed to even the medical missions. I'm always like, well, what happens when we're not there? Right. Does somebody else come? Is there another medical mission? Like, even that sort of gets to me a little bit, but that doesn't bother me as much as just trying to fix the one problem one time, like the one check kind of thing.
Yep. Well, it definitely doesn't work. But it's a useful thing to have some criticism and some critique of ministry and mission and charity. It really is, because there's so much out there that's bad.
Well, I think when we think of being involved in a church and, you know, somebody might say, hey, let's start this group. And then now I think to myself, I mean, nobody's come up to me and said that, but I mean, for example, you have to think, is this something that we need in this moment? Is this something that your church is going to need for a while? Like, are we doing it to, who are we doing this to serve?
Mm-hmm.
You, that person that wants to start whatever, or is there an actual need and it's going to keep going?
Right. Yeah. There's something to relief. I mean, there's something to giving people just some time to breathe for a minute and try and get themselves in order. I mean, I think about that with the hurricanes that have gone through.
Right.
There's a lot of usefulness to just give people immediate, here is resource and relief.
Sure.
But that when it stops there, then you get a problem.
Right.
Because people become dependent and bad things can happen. Bad dependencies and cultures can result. We saw that in Haiti. I mean, Haiti is still a wreck.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks. So, yeah. What else about it? You keep looking at the time.
You're going to cut into my nap time.
Oh, I'm going to take a big nap tomorrow on a plane. Be nice.
Anyway, I just wanted to see how long it was. You always tell people how long it's been.
It's been about 45 minutes.
I see that.
Not quite. So on this trip, you saw a lot of things that were really a challenge, like just horror stories that we don't need to recount, but what kind of goes through your head when you're dealing with some of those stories?
I guess I know that it relieves some of that person's burden to tell that story again. Like, if you never tell something to somebody, so something that you've gone through, and you never tell that to anybody else, some sort of traumatic event, you have to carry that yourself around.
Yeah.
But when these people tell us their stories, they have eased that burden off of themselves slightly. Not that it still doesn't hurt them or affect them. But maybe like a chunk of it, or at least just a chisel of it, can go with us, and we can, but we've told them, we're going to pray for you. And just sometimes some of that can help ease some. I mean, I think we forget that some of the, the physical scars can sometimes heal, but those emotional scars are always there. I don't know if these people are having nightmares, and I don't know if they're, but it's probably therapeutic for them. I mean, they're willing to share. Some of them are. And that's got to be to know that somebody else cares for them.
Yeah.
I mean, when you let go of that burden and somebody cares for you, sometimes that's enough to just get you through that day.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, these people feel forgotten by the world.
Yeah.
So it almost does require somebody who's from way on the other side of the world to say, you're not forgotten. I don't think anybody is so foolish to think that, well, these few Americans, you know, share Jesus with us, and now the wars in Sudan are going to be over.
No.
And they're going back to Iowa to fix all the problems. And I don't think they think that, but there's just a sense of they're not forgotten. And it does ease the pain a little bit. And I don't know, there's just something deeply disturbing about people who feel like they are gone, you know, just don't exist.
But if you think about, so that person tells us their story, and there's 12 of us plus Shar on our trip, and Jared and Joffrey and mm-hmm. Pastor Mutai, they tell us their story, and then we tell stories, and that gets out, and somebody says, hey, we had some people go to Kenya, and this is what they saw, this is what they heard, this is what they experience. And now that gets, I mean, it's not gossip if it, you know, they're spreading that word. And so now people that didn't know that there was a place of Kakama, now they do. And maybe it gets to the ear of somebody that can do something.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe.
Or just more people knowing and participating.
Right.
And, you know, maybe it begins somewhere else.
Or maybe the people that can't go, but they can support us other ways, like, or supporting the missionaries by buying supplies that they need,
yeah.
Or just supporting the mission in general, coming to our fundraisers and spending their money so that we can go to Kenya.
I've seen this trip grow so much, and this church embrace it and grow so much in the last, you know, 5-6 years that I look at it in terms of 20 years from now, this trip is going to be 25 years old, and they're going to look. We've seen how much better we've gotten, and how many more people are involved in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, I mean it's going to be unbelievable. I mean mm-hmm. at the clip at which it's growing and people are embracing it,
yeah,
it's pretty amazing. See, I'm not concerned at all about the longevity of this trip because it is deeply rooted in the culture of this church.
No, I'm not worried about that either. I'm just saying that I think part of our job coming back is not to forget the people that we talk to, but also to share our stories so that more people either get involved here at home or get involved to come over to Kenya, or I
Absolutely.
Don't know. I mean, you never know who you're going to experience and what connection is made.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I'm not saying they're going to end the war in Sudan, like that's somebody else's problem, but because I can't, but I don't know. I mean, what, maybe somebody else that's smarter than me has a solution to some of the problems. Maybe they
yeah.
do. I don't know.
And it's just interconnected too. So more people experience this thing in Kenya, then more people come back and more people change the local world too.
Very true. Like to even the whole, like people, I don't know who has volunteered or if they have for the kitchen work. And yes.
Yep. Yeah. We've had a bunch of people going.
Which is awesome. And they don't realize, but that's their need.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're behind the scenes, that's okay.
Yeah.
Because that's where they need you here.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, the more people you get significantly altered and changed in their mindset far away, the more you're going to change your local conditions as well. I mean, we see that here. We've talked about on different podcasts about how people are more involved back here in the States having gone there.
Yeah.
And so it's infectious. It just continues to spread.
Right.
So it's worth as many people going as we can get to go, because at the end of the day, it changes home far more than it changes away.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah, it's made this a different kind of church.
Definitely. In the past, I have I have observed missions as, well, we support that family or that guy or that girl, but we're separate. And I don't think that we have that anymore. Like we are living faith and we're missionaries.
This is us. Yeah.
Like we are missionaries, every single one of us. Whether you have actually gone overseas or if you're here, you're part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are all in this thing together. That is for sure.
Yeah.
It's a cool thing.
Because you never know. When we went to that, what we had split into groups and nobody had talked about this yet. I wanted to make sure everybody heard about this lady. So we were in the older part of Kakuma, and so there's buildings that have paintings on them and still not great living conditions, but obviously they've been there for a while, so things are a little bit more established. And we come to, it was Pastor Coonley and Jared, and I can't remember which other ladies were with me, but this lady said, yes, we could come into their compound, and there weren't a whole lot of people there. And she was so overcome, and she said, I had a dream last night that you were coming here. And she was so happy to see us and let us share. And she was part of the group that would pray, I think, every Wednesday or something like that. But she was like, she was just so amazed that she had this dream that there was going to be visitors. And here we are. We were actually in her house.
Yeah.
That was really cool. Mostly for me.
Yeah. But. Well, that's the thing, is that there is a sense that the Spirit is a little bit more active and kind of those miracles or, well, right on the edge of, is that a miracle or is that just a cool experience? Just happens more over there. And
yeah, because somebody would be like, yeah, right, how did you know she had a dream? And I'm like, well, I just have to believe her because there's not a whole lot of old ladies lying in Kenya.
Right.
Like, there just isn't. Like, that's just not how they are. They want to be truthful. And
there's just something more genuine about it when
when
you see the look on their face and they start to tell you something.
Well, or tears in their eyes, you know, when they're telling you, you know, that she knew that we were going to come.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
Because we were pretty much just walking around, randomly picking places to go talk. I mean, we had some ideas, and then after a while it was like, well, let's just go next door because they want to see us too.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and on that day it was specific, like, y'all go that direction.
Right.
And we're going to go this direction. It wasn't really.
And we'll meet back in an hour.
Yeah.
Or two.
Or three.
Because.
Or whatever.
An hour does not mean an hour.
No, it does not. Yeah, that was a cool day. We get to see a lot of interesting stuff. I think I'm trying to remember which day that was, which church that was. Is that the same day we saw the little girl in the UNI cheerleader outfit?
I think so.
Yeah, I think it was.
I think so.
That was fun. Yeah, it's a different kind of a trip. This one is the best one, I think. I mean, all of them are very good and all of them are really cool. And it's not just the best one because you were on it, but...
I know.
It was really nice to have somebody there with me that was just familiar and like I didn't have to worry about managing you. That was kind of nice.
Well, thank you. I didn't have to be managed. Well, I mean, that was a thought too. Like, I didn't want you to think that you had to manage me. I mean, there was a time when I got emotional, but like not, I don't know. I don't feel like I have to cling to you or be by you. I mean, I can go off with a different group. And,
right. Well, it's a weird thing because, like, you know, for everybody else there, I'm their pastor.
Right.
And for you, I'm not your pastor.
No, but Pastor Coonley was there.
Right. There was somebody to talk to.
Right.
But, like, still, like, it's just, I have a different relationship with everybody else there.
Yeah.
So that was, but it worked. It's not like it was nothing weird about it.
No. Because it was fine, because we're married, so we can share a bed.
Yeah, right. Legally.
Right. Unlike Julie and Delaney.
But, you know, there was a sense of, a completion to have you on that trip, because a lot of times when I would go, every time I've been on a trip, I've always felt this moment where you're doing introductions and you say, my name is Luke, I'm a pastor, and I have 6 children, and I'm married to my wife, Joni, and they look at me like, where is she? Like, why would you
like,
come
why
here?
Why didn't you bring her with?
Why would you come to a place without, it's like this, in their mindset, they're just much more, marriage is this thing that happens kind of together, you know, like the whole life is marriage together.
Yeah, but they are there without their husbands. Some by choice and some not by choice.
I think that's an issue though. I think that's
If we're married, why didn't they? Okay.
Yeah, like you have the option of having a spouse with you. We don't. Why would you ever not have your spouse with you? Like
right.
If you had that choice, then I'd be like, oh, right. About that. In the US, like, we're just really comfortable. We're married and, you know, you go to work and I go to work and then you go this way for that thing and I go this way and it's no big deal. A couple of weekends out of the year, you drive to Chicago, hang out with the family and I stay back. It's just not, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's always the case for them, that they just wish they would prefer to be kind of together.
Yeah.
And it was always weird to them. It seems like every trip I've been on, when I say I'm married, they always look at me like, well, where is your wife?
I'm looking for another one.
Yeah. I'm taking applications. Here's how many cows it requires. Anything else about the trip you want to tell people that's important and stuff?
It's all important.
It is all important.
No, I think we got it all. I think other podcasts have covered a lot of the other things and
yeah,
things that we've seen and done. So
we should do this again.
Why?
Because I like podcasts.
Okay.
And I like you. It's your birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
29 years old today.
That's right.
Congratulations. All right. Thanks. We'll
turn on the drums.
And.